Okay, good Rosh Shavuot Tov to everybody. Nice to see you. Parshas Chayisara, there's a lot to talk about. But I want to share with you what I think is an interesting idea. And it really struck me yesterday more than ever. You know, when we talk about the Parshas Shavuot, so there's always so much to discuss, so much to talk about. There are storylines, issues, mitzvos. In Parshas Chayisara, there are actually only two prakim. There are two chapters, Perek Chav Gimel and Perek Chav Dalet. And there are only two stories in the entire Sefer Parshas Chayisara. I'm sorry, I should say that there really are three chapters. There's Perek Chav Gimel, Chav Dalet, and Chav Hei. But there are really only two episodes that span the entire Parsha. That's it. Parshas Chayisara has two storylines, two stories. The first story, of course, is the purchase of the Ma'ara Samachpela, Avram's purchase of the Ma'ara to serve as a burial place for his wife and for his descendants. That is Perek Chav Gimel. Perek Chav Dalet, chapter 24, which is a total of 67 psukim, 67 very long psukim, which we will address as well, is the story of Avram sending Eliezer to find a wife for his son Yitzchak. And that's really it. The end of the parsha is a few short psukim, Perek Chaf Hei, which talks about the descendants, the lineage, the genealogy of Avram, and Avram's marriage to Hagar. So really, there are two entire episodes that span an entire parsha. I don't know what other parsha that we have in all of Chamisha Chumshei Torah that only has two episodes, two events, two stories, two storylines. The purchase of the Ma'aras Machpelah and Perek Chav Gimel, and Avram's interest in marrying off his son Yitzchak, and Eliezer serving as the critical individual to really close the deal and to seal the deal. So those are the two events. And it made me think, is there anything about these two events, these two stories, these two episodes that is really very much in sync? Or is there any common denominator between these two stories? And is there any reason that Prakim Chav Gimel and Chav Dalet, chapters 23 and 24 of Sefer Bereishis, and really the totality of Parshas Chayisara, tells us about these two events? And after further thought, I believe there's something very, very unique about these two episodes, and something very, very powerful that Avram Avinu is doing. If you look at the Parsha alone, and just go through it pasuk by pasuk, and perek by perek, it seems that there are two independent and unique events. That there's the purchase of the plot, and there's Avram's interest in marrying off his son. But never shall the twain meet, and they're mutually exclusive. However, after further analysis and careful thought, I believe that Avram Avinu is doing something very, very important. You know, when you are a leader and when you build a dynasty, Avram Avinu found monotheism. He found the Kadosh Baruch Hu. He taught it to the world. And you see this contemporarily. There's a great challenge that when that individual passes on, the potential for what they have accomplished can slowly but surely very, very much wither away. Because when an individual is so powerful, so productive, so successful, it's very hard for somebody to take over what that accomplishment or what that individual has done. You see this in the gamut of areas. You see this true in any leadership position. It's true often in yeshivas. It's true in shuls. It's true with yeshivas. It's even true in politics, not in our country where we have a democracy, thankfully. But it's true in areas where one individual is so powerful and is so successful and has built an empire that it's very hard for a child, it's very hard for a descendant, it's very hard for a student, or it's very hard for any hiree to come in and to continue the tradition or to continue to develop and grow upon what has occurred. I believe in Parshas Chayisara, as Avram Avinu is coming to the end of his years on this earth, of 175 years, he begins to contemplate what's going to be after he leaves this world. How is he going to make sure to manufacture and to concretize there's going to be continuity to what he did? It's very, very wonderful to build and to succeed and to grow and to develop. But if there's no exit plan and if there's no plan for transition, then every success that Avram has been able to build and to develop can potentially not carry root and not be able to survive and to succeed and to pass down. That's what Avram Avinu is doing in Parshas Chayesara, and there are two ways that he's going to do that. Number one, he recognizes that he has to purchase a burial plot for he and the entire family. And what the purchase of a burial plot does, I believe, in the world of Avram, is telling his family, you know, I'm not going to be here forever. We need to start to think about what's going to be next. The purchase of the plot is telling Sarah, and it's telling his family, his children, and it's telling the world, really, that we are not here forever. Man is not going to be in existence l'chaim u'l'shalom l'olam va'ed. There's olam hazeh, there's olam haba. There's this world and there's the next world. And Avram Avinu has to really, really create that understanding, because often when an individual of such success and such power, there's that ability to think that, you know, it'll just go on. There always will be Avraham. Avram will get us out of all of our troubles. Avram will teach us everything we have to know. He will be our conduit between man and God. And Avram says, no, it's not going to be like that. We need to set up a transition plan. We need to create a continuity. And therefore, the way to do it is going to be by the purchase of the Maras HaMachpelah. Avram is a realist. He lives in this world. He understands that things are going to be different after he is no longer. And thus the purchase of the plot and the burial plot of Maras Machpelah in Hebron is teaching his family, his followers, and the individuals who he has brought closer to God, that there has to be a successful way to manage what is going to be after. That's what Avram does right away. But Avram doesn't stop there. Avram says there's got to be more than that. It can't just be that the purchase of a burial plot is my legacy. And it can't be the purchase of a burial plot is going to be the end all and be all, and that's the way I'm going to teach the people and my surroundings and my students in the world what is going to be next. But rather, I have to have an active plan to make sure and to concretize that my teachings and everything that I have brought to the world is going to continue. How am I going to do that? So that's Perek Chaf Dalet. That's chapter 24. And if you read the pasuk carefully, the opening pasuk of Perek 24, the Avram Zakein ba bayamim. Avram is aging. He's coming of years. Vashem berachas Avram bakol. Avram has been blessed with everything. But there's one thing that Avram hasn't secured yet, and that's the continuity and making sure that his teachings and his tradition and everything that he has brought to the world is going to continue. And the way that he does that is telling his Eved, Eliezer, please find a wife for my son, Yitzchak. This is going to way that I am going to make sure to manufacture the continuity and the traditions that I have developed, the findings, the teachings, the yesodos, the mi bal habira, the monotheism that I have brought to this world has to find root in some real way. It can't just be through the purchase of a plot of land. It can't just be through Maras Machpelah that people are going to remember me when they come here. But it needs to be b'chayim. It needs to be in this world as well. And thus what Avram Avinu does, and I believe very powerfully in Prakim Chav Gimel and Chav Dalet, Parshas Chayesara, chapters 23 and 24, is Avram Avinu says, it's time for me to pass the buck. It's time for me to pass the baton. It's time for me to make sure that there's going to be an exit plan and a transition that's going to be successful and that's going to make sure to concretize everything that I have done in the 175 years that I've walked in this world. And that's what Avram Avinu does very powerfully in this week's Parsha. And thus, I believe that's really the juxtaposition of chapters 23, 24, Prakim Chav Gimel and Chav Dalet. And that's why the entire corpus and the entire crux of Parshas Chayesara is just that. There's nothing else. That's all Parshas Chayesara is. These two chapters teaching us that there needs to be a continuity, there needs to be a tradition. Now, if you look, interestingly enough, the last few psukim in Parshas Chayesara, which is Perek Chafei, chapter 25, which is a totality of 18 psukim, you see that as well. Because there you see of the death of Avram, but after the death of Avram, there's the genealogy of Yishmael. Even though Yishmael is not going to be, as the pasuk says in Parshas Vayera, ki bi Yitzchak ikar lechazara. Even though Yishmael and his family and his lineage and his dynasty is not going to be the dynasty that's going to secure and solidify the Jewish people, nonetheless, there's still a continuity which speaks to the fact that Yishmael on some level did do tshuva. And Yishmael was interested in burying his father Avram. And there was some level of reconciliation between Yishmael and Yitzchak. There was some level of reconciliation between Yishmael and his father Abraham. And therefore, the entire Parsha really speaks to an end of days, a successful transition. And as I mentioned before, it don't have to look too far. Contemporarily, we look around the world and we look in businesses, you look in, like I said, yeshivas, in shuls, in politics. One of the greatest challenges we always have is when an individual is so powerful that the next generation is unable really to hold on and to build on what happened. And Avram recognizes that, and he doesn't want there to be in-house fighting. He doesn't want there to be sibling rivalry. He doesn't want there to be any misunderstandings. He doesn't want anything that he built to go to pot. And therefore, as a result, he leaves very clear demarcations and he sets the stage for a successful continuity post his patira. Now, of course, and we'll learn about this more next week's Parsha, Parsha's Toldos, Yitzchak of all of the Avos is the Av who really continues the teachings of his father Avram, as opposed to having any self-identity, right? The Pasuk says, Titein emes li Yaakov chesed li Avraham. Avraham had his own identity. Avram was the Midah of Chesed. Yaakov was the Midah of Emes. What was Yitzchak? Now, we'll talk about Yitzchak next week in Parshas Toldos. But of all of the Shloshes Avos, of all of the three Avos, Yitzchak's role, Yitzchak's responsibility, Yitzchak's job is really to be the continuity of his father Avram. And sometimes, again, you see that contemporarily and throughout history, Jewish history, and throughout political history, that sometimes the child, the son in this circumstance, Yitzchak, his job is really just to hold root and to be able to pass on the teachings of his father, besides just being an individual who is so earth-shattering and has his own way about him in terms of being independent and being a machadish. Really, Yitzchak's role and Yitzchak's job, and you will see this absolutely clear in next week's Parsha, Parsha's Toldos, is to be that, to continue the traditions, continue the teachings of his father Avram, and it's very clear that the life of Yitzchak really speaks to just that. So therefore, you see Prakim Chav Gimel and Chav Dalet, 24 and 25, and really speak to this totality, to this Yisod of Avram Avinu. But I'd like to look even deeper at these two chapters, Prakim Chav Gimel and Prakim Chav Dalet, and share with you what I think I believe is another common denominator, another similarity between the parsha of the purchase of the Maris and Machpelah and the parsha of Avram sending Eliezer to find a wife for his son Yitzchak. If you take a look at something startling in Perek Chav Gimel, chapter 23, you will see something quite phenomenal. Interestingly enough, I actually saw this in your house, Barbie, when your husband Yitzchak was sitting Shiva last year for his sister. I chanced upon a book of Rabbi Noach Weinberg on the Parsha during Shachris. I admit I was looking at another book during Shachris. And I opened up, it was Parshas Chayesara, because I know last week was the Yahrzeit. And Rabbi Noach Weinberg has really what I think is a phenomenal diuk and a really interesting point that he makes in Perek Chav Gimel. If you look at Perek Chav Gimel, chapter 23, there are a total of 20 psukim. A total of 20 psukim in the entire Perek Chav Gimel. And as I mentioned, Perek Chav Gimel is only and all about the purchase of Maris and Machpelah. Take a look at this. You will note, and this is Reb Noach's point, the words B'nei Ches appear 8 times, right? In a total of 20 psukim, we reference the B'nei Ches 80 times. Now, where are the B'nei Ches? The B'nei Ches were the Chittites. And the Chittites, of course, were the people who were the settlers in the area in the space of Hebron, and they were the ones, Ephron being their chief, that Avram was going to purchase the Ma'aras and Machpelah from. And over again, almost an inordinate amount of times, does the Torah write the words B'nei Ches, the Chittites, 8 times. I mean, you could tell us that once, You could tell us twice, but eight times you could read the psukim over and over again, B'nei Ches. And he points out even more, if I remember correctly, not only does it say B'nei Ches, but another two times it says, Lifnei Am Ha'aretz, in front of the people of the land. And Am Ha'aretz today we refer to as an unlearned individual. And here is the Torah source for that. The Am Ha'aretz, they were the people of the land. So that means a total of 10 times in 20 psukim, it means in every other pasuk, right? Basically, we reference the B'nei Ches. Now, really, the leader of the B'nei Ches, of course, is Ephron. And Ephron is the individual who really is the mainstay and the main player and the catalyst in the purchase and in the plot and in the dialogue between Avraham and Ephron. And the B'nei Ches seem to be playing a more of a peripheral role in the purchase, but Ephron is the one who's going to ultimately be the one that they have to purchase the land for. So asks Reb Noach, why is it that the Torah continues to repeat those words, the B'nei Ches, over and over again? You can look, Pasuk Aleph, Pasuk Ges, and all the way through Pasuk Chav, the B'nei Ches, those two words, and Am Ha'aretz is mentioned 10 times. Why? What's the significance? The Torah, of course, doesn't mention things for naught. So Reb Noach says something, and it's so true. I said this over at our table, I think Friday night or Shabbos. I said, guess who says this? They didn't get it right. But if you know Reb Noach Weinberg, this is like what they say, Dvarim ru'uyim l'misha amram. These are words that are appropriate for the person who said it. Sometimes when a person says a Dvar Torah, it's like totally identifies them. It's so true. And this was such a truth about Reb Noach. If you knew Reb Noach Weinberg, if you know his writings a little bit, I was privileged to learn in the yeshiva a little bit, to teach in Eish HaTorah. And Reb Noach was a person beyond, a larger than life personality. I think there's a biography about him that was put out recently. I haven't seen it, but I'm sure it's quite good. Jonathan Rosenblum wrote it. I'm sure it's quite Talmud. But Reb Noach Weinberg was really not just a colorful person and not just a Talmud Chacham, but he was a larger than life personality whose responsibility for what we call today Kirov, really, he really put that on the map. So Reb Noach says that a person in life is often given an opportunity to make an impact and to make a difference. And what he used to say, use the words, you could change the world. Every person can change the world. He said the B'nai Ches were given the opportunity at this point to decide whether or not they were going to allow the sale to go through. Were they going to decide, convince Ephron, and to work with Ephron to allow Avram to buy this plot of land? Now, they could have easily said no, and it wouldn't have been such a big deal. It just means they wouldn't have made a business transaction. Avram wouldn't have purchased this real estate, and they would have retained it. Sometimes you say no to a business deal. Sometimes you say yes. They could have said yes. They could have said no. And if they would have said no, you would have said, all right, they said no. Big deal. But the fact that they said yes changed the world, says Reb Noach, because now we have Hebron, and now we have Maras HaMachpelah. We have the birthplace and the death plot for Avram and Sarah, for Yitzchak and Rivka, for Yaakov and Rachel. There's a purchased plot of land where our forefathers and mothers are buried, where the Avos and the Imahos are buried, and who doesn't travel to Hebron? Who has not seen the city of Hebron? Who hasn't been in Maras HaMachpelah? If after you go to Yerushalayim, so you go to Hebron, you go to Maras HaMachpelah, it's the spot, it's the place, it's the most fundamental, critical place for the Jew. Maras HaMachpelah, it says in Chazal, is the Pischo Shel Olam Haba. From there is the way, is the direct channel. If you look on Waze, it'll take you directly from Hebron to Olam Haba. There's a tunnel that takes you right there. That is what Hebron is. And the B'nai Ches had the opportunity to forfeit that and to say no. But Adarabba, the Torah mentions their name 8 to 10 times in these psukim to remember that what they did changed the world. It didn't just create a place for Avram and Sarah. It didn't just create a place for Yitzchak and Rivka, not just for Yaakov and Rachel, but what the B'nai Ches changed us. Because who doesn't have as part of their vernacular Hebron? Who doesn't have as part of their vernacular Maras HaMachpelah? Who hasn't visited? Who hasn't poured out their heart at Maras HaMachpelah? Who hasn't visited Maras HaMachpelah? Who doesn't want to be at the kever of Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, Sarah, Rivka, Leah? We all want to be there. That's where we want to be. That's a special, unique place. And that's what makes Chevron, Chevron. And therefore, says Reb Noach, that they had the opportunity to make a change and an impact and a decision that would change the world. And thus, we mention the Bnei Ches 8 times. We say Am Haaretz 2 times to recognize and to realize that a person can change the world with one decision, one opportunity that an individual has, one chance that a person is given, you can change the world. And this is something that Rabbi Noach preached all the time, telling people that you could change the world, you can impact a person, you can impact your community, you can impact people. A nice word, a kind thing to say. We could speak about this from here till next Chai Sara, how many people we know who said one thing to somebody, one good word to somebody, one positive point, one good morning, one good afternoon, one good evening, one Dvar Torah, come into shul, come over to my house, that made such an impact on somebody's life. You could read now about Reb David Feinstein, Reb Jonathan Sachs, who we lost this week. I'm reading so much about them. Small little things, not the drushas that they gave to 10,000 people, not the YouTubes that were 3 million hits that people saw. I'm talking about small things that they did for people, for individuals who really helped shape their lives and shape people. That's what the Bnei Ches did, and that's what every single person can do. You don't have to be Rabbi David Feinstein Zatzal, you don't have to be Rabbi Jonathan Sachs Zatzal, but small things and decisions that we are given, opportunities that are handed over to us, can really have a formidable impact on people, on individuals. And that's why the Torah says to Reb Noach, reminds us who made this decision, how they made this decision, and what we have today. That is the Bnei Ches. And as I saw that pshat last year, or maybe it was 2 years ago, since the Petira, I remembered, as I was reading Perek Chavdalet yesterday, chapter 24, that I think there's something very, very similar that takes place in Perek Chavdalet. As Avram sends Eliezer to look for a wife for his son Yitzchak, Eliezer, similar to the Bnei Ches, has a very, very big decision to make. And when you think about it, and when you see Rashi, it wasn't just, should I perform? Should I accept this shlichus or not? That wasn't it. It was much more than that. Because as you know, Rashi points out, toward the middle of the story, Eliezer also had a daughter. And Eliezer very much wanted his daughter to marry Yitzchak. Who wouldn't want their daughter to marry Yitzchak? And now all of a sudden, Avram is sending Eliezer far away, leaving Canaan to go back to Haran to find the wife. And Eliezer's thinking to himself, and even communicated to Avram, what about me? I'm your faithful servant. I'm Eliezer. I also have a daughter. Why are you not looking at her? What did I do wrong? I've served you. I've sat at your feet. I've apprenticed you. I've helped you. You know me better than everybody, says Eliezer to his master Avram. Therefore, Eliezer has a very, very difficult decision to make. And he struggles with this. Although you don't see it in the psukim, it's very, very clear that this is something that Eliezer was battling. And like the Bnei Ches, Eliezer had a very critical decision to make. He could completely botch the slichos. He has the opportunity in his hands to fulfill his master's calling, to fulfill his master's request, or he could botch it. And there are plenty of ways to botch it. Anybody could botch a shlichus. Any proxy can make a mistake. You could lose something, you could forget something, you can't find somebody. It's very easy for Eliezer to come back after a long trip and say, sorry, boss, sorry, Avram, I couldn't fulfill the mission. Therefore, Eliezer now also has the opportunity over and over again to make a critical decision. As we opened up the shiur this morning, this is Avram's legacy. This is Avram's opportunity to continue the tradition that he brought to this world. And he's putting everything in the hands of Eliezer to make this come alive, to make this come true. Will he be able to fulfill the mission or not? And like Perek Chav Gimel, where you see the Bnei Ches, their name mentioned about 10 times, in Perek Chav Daled, the same thing is true over and over again. Eliezer's name is mentioned over and over again. Now, I didn't count, but I believe upwards of 30 times in 67 Psukim, Eliezer's name is mentioned. Now, don't all yell at once. I know Eliezer's name is not mentioned in the parasha. It either says Eved or it says Ish, and we'll get to that in a moment. Why isn't Eliezer's name mentioned? You will not find the name Eliezer, and if you want, I put you up to it. You can look in every pasuk. You're not going to find Eliezer's name. You'll find Eved or Ish. Now you'll find it once, but that's when Avram says to his avdos, "Kan beisa Moshe b'chol ashalo." So you're not going to see the name Eliezer. We'll talk about that in a moment. But nonetheless, you still see the similarity, I believe, between Prokim Chav Gimel and Chav Dalet in the respect that two people had a major opportunity to make a significant decision. And whether they would say yes or say no, and whatever decision they would make would change the world forever. And Eliezer's reaction and his response in fulfilling the shlichos creates the ultimate marriage between Yitzchak and Rivka, and of course we all know the destiny and the genealogy and the trajectory that emerges from Yitzchak and Rivka, and therefore, just like the Bnei Ches were successful in their mission and their decision to go through with the purchase of the burial plot, and they said to Ephron, let's do it, let's make the exchange. Whether or not they should do it for free or for Arba Meo Shekel is a separate question. That's Ephron's business. But the Bnei Ches allow the deal to go through. And the same thing is true with Eliezer, with all the struggles and challenges and with all of the difficulties, the emotional difficulty, the physical difficulty. Eliezer goes through with the deal, and that marriage ultimately leads us to what we have today. So you see another similarity, another common denominator between these two, Prakim, Prakim, Chav Gimel, Chav Dalet, Parshas Chayesara, and that is the opportunity to make the right decision, and these two people did, and therefore their names, the Bnei Ches and Eliezer, Eved, Avram's names are repeated over and over and over and over, double the amount of times that they should be in order to teach us this lesson about making a significant decision, a one-time opportunity can change the world forever. But as I just mentioned, I like to take now a closer look at Perek Chav Dalet and talk about something that I just hinted to 2 moments ago. And as I just noted, Eliezer's name is not mentioned in the entire Perek Chav Dalet, the entire story. You'll take a look. In these 67 psukim, Eliezer's name is not mentioned at all. And of course, that's a big, big wonder and a question. How can it be? Eliezer is really the protagonist in the entire story. He is the individual who is doing basically all of the talking and all of the negotiating. Without Eliezer, the deal will not be complete. And with Eliezer, there is the opportunity for the finding of a young lady to marry Yitzchak. So Eliezer's name is not mentioned, and I like to raise that as question number one. Why not? Why is Eliezer's name not mentioned in the entire parak? Question number one. Question number two. If you take a look in Perek Chav Dalet, you'll actually see not only is his name not mentioned once, but he's referred to two different ways. Two different ways. He's referred to as an Eved, number one, and he's referred to as an Ish, number two. Either as a slave, Eved, or as an Ish, as a person. So question number two, why? Why do we refer to Eliezer in two different ways? As an Eved, as a slave, and as an Ish, as a man. What's the significance of those two different ways that we refer to Eliezer? And question number three, to really put the entire episode into a full picture, is first, if you look in the Psukim, Eliezer is referred to as an Eved. The first third of the story, Eliezer is referred to as an Eved. Then the Torah switches and refers to him as an Ish, and then finally, he's referred to as an Eved again. So the Torah goes back and forth. Not only does his name not mention, not only is he referred to in two different ways as Eved or Ish, but the Torah refers to him first as Eved, then as Ish, and then again back to as Eved. Why? Over the years, I believe I've mentioned the commentary of Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, Zichron Levrach, and the Emes LeYaakov, who has an ingenious way to explain Perek Chav Dalet based upon some of these issues. But I'd like to share with you another idea, a independent idea as to why I believe the Torah refers to Eliezer in two different ways, doesn't mention his name, and more than that, refers to him first as Eved, then as Ish, and then as Eved. Here's what I think. Eliezer, as we all know, in terms of his name, really, really speaks to the ultimate individual who apprenticed his teacher, the ultimate servant, right? Ki anu avadecha ve'ata adoneinu, as we say in the Yom Nirayim, we see ourselves as servants to our master God. Eliezer too was the ultimate servant. He was dal. He was able to receive from his Rebbe, from his master Avraham, and poured and heard everything that he took from the house of Avraham and brought it out to everybody else. That's what Eliezer did. Eliezer was the ultimate servant. He was the ultimate receptacle of the teachings of Avraham. He was the student of students of Avraham Avinu. And there's no greater way that he would want to be identified and is identified but that. And if you take a look at Perek Chavdal Pasuk Aleph, it says just that. Avram zakin baba yamin, Hashem berachas Avram bakol. Vayomer Avram el avdo zikan beso. Avram said to his servant, the elder of his household, Hamoshel bekol asher lo, who controls everything that is his. That's quite a way to refer to Eliezer. Number one, avdo, a servant. Number two, zkan beso, the elder of his household. Number three, Hamoshel bekol asher lo, who controls all that is his. Meaning, Eliezer is the key of his entire kingdom, the key of his entire palace, the key of everything that Avram has lies in the hands of Eliezer, not Yitzchak, not in his grandchildren, but Eliezer. And then he tells him, Simno yodcha tachas ireischi, place your hand under my thigh, and he's going to tell Eliezer to take a shvua, that he's going to go back and find a woman, a wife for his son Yitzchak. So that's Eliezer. Eliezer is the ultimate Eved. And an Eved is somebody who does exactly what his master says. And that's what Eliezer has done his entire life. And that's seemingly what Eliezer will do again. And Eliezer sees himself as the ultimate servant and sees himself as the ultimate student of Avraham Avinu. And he goes about this mission with that approach and with that attitude, which he has had his entire life, being Eved Avram, being the servant of Avram, being the person who Avram can rely on. But then if you continue reading the story, something amazing happens. Eliezer continues to work as his master's servant and continues to have the approach of a student of Avram and being a servant of Avram. But something amazing happens. Something phenomenal happens as you read the pasuk, as the story unfolds, and Eliezer, to his amazement, creates this way, a nichush, a way to see whether or not the woman who is going to come to the Be'er will be appropriate, is going to be the one who is going to first offer the gemalim to drink, and then is going to offer him to drink. That is the one that the Torah reports is going to be the appropriate wife for Avram's son Yitzchak. And amazingly enough, the Torah reports after that, when he sees this woman by the name of Rivka, who's at the well and first offers the gemalim to drink and then offers him to drink, Eliezer says in Pasuk Chaf Aleph, in Perek Chaf Dalet, V'ha'ish mishtoela, macharish ladas, ha'atzliach Hashem darko ilo. Pasuk Chaf Aleph, the man was astonished. Eliezer was amazed, reflecting to know that Hashem had made his successful journey. Eliezer can't believe it. Till now, he's been an Eved. And till now, he's been a servant of his master Avram. And that means monkey see, monkey do. Whatever Avram says, that's what I'm going to do. But now, for the first time, Eliezer says, I'm going to be an independent. I have an idea. Avram didn't tell me how to find the woman. Avram didn't tell me what I should be looking for in terms of a wife for his son. Avram didn't give me those directions. All Avram told me was to travel, to leave Canaan, to go back to our homeland, and to find a wife for my son Yitzchak. But he never told me what to look for. He didn't tell me how tall. He didn't tell me what color eyes she had. He didn't tell me which school she went to. He didn't tell me about her parents, not what color tablecloth they use on Shabbos. None of that, Avram said. All he said was, find a wife for my son Yitzchak. And Eliezer, for the first time in his life, has to come up with a way to decide on his own. How is he going to find? And it's his decision. Like we said earlier, this only complicates and really fortifies the strength and the power of the decision that Eliezer has. He has to decide. And Eliezer all of a sudden has the idea that the woman who's going to come to the well and who's going to offer my camels to drink and then will offer me to drink, that'll be the woman. So for the first time in his life, Eliezer has to make an independent decision. And therefore, for the first time that he does that and he sees success, he's referred to no longer as an Eved, but rather as an Ish. His entire personality changes. His entire attitude and approach to life changes because he's no longer a servant to his master. But at the first time and for the first time, he becomes an independent thinker. He becomes an Ish. He becomes a man. And for that reason, the Torah continues now for the next series of about 15 psukim to refer to Eliezer for the first time no longer as an Eved, but now he's referred to as an Ish. He's referred to as a man. You can look in the psukim. It's phenomenal. For the next 10 to 15 psukim, it's Ish. Vayikor ha'ish vayishtachu l'Hashem. And if you continue reading the psukim, you'll see that the word Ish, pasuk lamed beis, vayavo ha'ish habaisa. And the word Ish is used now for Eliezer because he's no longer an Eved. At this point, he's an Ish because of his success in accomplishing the mission that he on his own has come up with to do. But if you take a look in Pasuk Lamed Dalet, verse 34, that changes. All of a sudden, he reverts back to an Eved overnight. Immediately, when he introduces himself to Ephron, when he introduces himself to Lavan and to Besuel, what are his introductory words? Vayomar Eved Avram Anochi. I'm an Eved of Avram. And the question, of course, is why? Why is he now reverting back to his original distinction, his original title of Eved? He's an Ish. He's a man. He came up and he accomplished. He was successful in figuring out how exactly he was going to be able to come up with a plan to find a wife for his master's son Yitzchak. But I believe what Eliezer is teaching us, that often in life as we climb the ladder, and we are successful emerging from avadim to anashim, figuring out our own path in life, succeeding, growing, emerging from our parents' home, in our own careers, with our own characteristic traits, and we make a name for ourselves as anashim, ishim anachnu. At the end of the day, Eliezer says, I'm still Eved Avram. I know where I came from. I know who I am, and I will never forget that. As independent as I am, as successful as I am, as entrepreneuring as I am, as much as a maverick I am, and as much of a special independent and unique trail that I blaze in my life, and wherever I move and wherever I go, whatever successes and failures, it's true they belong to me as an Ish. But at the end of the day, Eved Avram Anochi, I know who I am. I know where I come from. I know what life is about. And I can never forget who I am, what I'm about. I was molded by Avram. I was built by Avram. And I'm Eved Avram Anochi. That's who I am. It's true. I could come up with my own ideas, my own plans, and I could have my own independent way about me. And I was successful in accomplishing this mission. Nonetheless, at the end of the day, the distinction, the title, the way I want to be remembered and the person who I am deep down is Eved Avram Anochi. And it's for that reason that Eliezer goes from an Eved to an Ish and back to Eved. Eliezer's name, as I mentioned, was never told. It's never mentioned to us. And that's because he's so much subordinate to his master. The ultimate servant doesn't even have a name. And thus, Eliezer's name is not even mentioned in these 67 psukim. In the entire chapter 24, Perek of Dalet, you won't find the name Eliezer. And he's the main individual in the entire chapter. Without Eliezer, there is no story. Nonetheless, his name is not mentioned because he's subordinate. He's an Eved. But as he climbs out of his Avdus and emerges from being second to Avram, and he emerges independent as an Ish, but nonetheless, Eliezer never forgets where he comes from, and therefore the Torah concludes referring to him as an Eved. And it's for that reason, And you could take a look in the Emes LeYaakov, you could take a look in Rashi, as well as other Mefarshim in Rashi. It could be that the reason why Eliezer never thought his daughter could marry Avraham is because he sees himself as an Eved. He never has that independent attitude that he and his daughter, he can't even imagine even entertaining, asking Avraham that his daughter should marry Yitzchak. He can't. But you know when it does? When he's successful in his mission, when he becomes an Ish, when he becomes a man, at that point, Eliezer says, you know what, maybe I can. And that's where Rashi says the communication between Eliezer and Avram took place, even though clearly it took place much earlier. But it's only at this point in the story where Eliezer begins to believe that he can really have his daughter marry Avram, because he's no longer just an Eved, he's an Ish. But of course, by the end, he recognizes who he is and what he's all about. And ultimately, he's Eved Avram. And of course, his success in being able to marry off Rivka to Yitzchak solidifies himself as the ultimate Zkan Beso, Moshe B'Kol Ashilo, the ultimate Eved, following his master's request to a T, fulfilling the mission, just like we mentioned in Parak Chav Gimel, the B'nai Ches did, so too Eliezer does, and of course, happily ever after, Yitzchak and Rivka marry, they build a home, and of course, what emerges from that home is Yaakov and Esav, and ultimately the Shiftei Ka. So Eliezer, as being a very, very quiet and silent deal and policy maker, really solidifies Klal Yisrael. Just like we have Chevron, and just like we have the Maris Machpel, because these people called the B'nai Ches, so too we have the marriage of Yitzchak and Rivka because of somebody who's quiet, somebody whose name is not even mentioned in the Parsha. His name is Eliezer. Of course, this speaks to the power and the potential that every single individual has to really, really make a big difference and to change and to create and to shake the world in phenomenal, phenomenal ways. Allow me just to conclude with a final comparison, which dawned upon me as well yesterday, between Prakim Chav Gimel and Chav Dalet, chapters 23 and 24. The Torah opens and mentions, of course, Parshas Chayesara with the death of Chayesara, right? We all know, Vayu Chayesara, Mea Shana, Ve'esrim Shana, Ve'sheva Shanim, Shnei Chayesara, right? Rivka, Sarah lived for 127 years. And of course, as Rashi famously notes, Kulam Shavin the Torah, Tova. All of the years of Sarah are considered to be terrific, perfect. She's so happy, satisfied. The end of her life, she looks back and she says, 127 years. What a wonderful life that I have. How blessed I have. And of course, raises the question, Sarah didn't have it so easy. Sarah was barren. Sarah was abducted. Sarah had challenges. She had to move from place to place. She had a difficult son. His name was Ishmael. So don't tell me that everything is so perfect. Everything is so ginger and everything is so good. Being barren isn't easy. Having a child called Ishmael, who's a para adom, who is a wild beast. That's how the Torah refers to him. And then being abducted and moving from place to place. Sarah had enormous challenges. So what's the pshat? Rashi says 127 years, kulam shavin latova, and of course her death emerges, as the Rashi tells us, that the juxtaposition of her death to Parshas Vayera with Akedas Yitzchus, because she thinks that her son was killed, that her son was put on the altar. So even though she had this Yitzchak, she dies because she understands that her little Yingala, the child of her dreams, it's Yitzchak Yikar Lechazera, is being taken as a sacrifice. Parcha nishmaso, she expires as a result. Kulam shavim latova. How do we understand Rashi? If you look at the end of the parsha, in Perek Chaf Hey, Avraham dies as well. Vayigva vayamas Avraham b'seiva tova. Zakein v'saveya v'yeosef el amov. Avram expires, dies at a good, ripe old age, mature, and this word is very, very powerful, saveya, content. Avram is content. He looks back at 175 years, just like his wife looks back at 127 years, saveya. So again, another commonality between these two chapters, the beginning of the parsha and the end of the parsha, Sarah and Avram, the beautiful marriage, the beautiful couple of Avram and Sarah look back at their lives calmly, peacefully, contently. But like Sarah, who had trials and tribulations, Avram did as well. He also had a wife who was barren. He also had a son called Yishmael who was difficult. He also had 10 tests, the Asara Nisyonos. He also was told to place his son on the Mizbech. He also had to travel. His wife was abducted. He didn't have it so easy. So what does it mean when the Torah tells us Zaken Visaveya? He was content. He was satisfied. He was Savata. He felt peaceful in terms of the life that he lived. I think what we see in Avram and Sarah is something of a model that we need to look for in our lives. There are two ways you could look at a situation. There are two ways that you could look at life. You could look at it with a glass half full, or you could look at it with a glass half empty. You could look at the trials, the tribulations, the difficulties, the challenges, and you could allow that to define you. And Sarah and Avram could have said, this was not easy. This was not easy. This was a challenge. This was difficult. This was hard. And they could allow that to cloud their vision, to define them, and that could be their personality. But Avram and Sarah say, no, absolutely not. Kulam shavim letova. Zaken v'saveya. Absolutely not. The glass is half full. I have the opportunity to live a life. I've been given a life. We've had the opportunity to be able to teach Torah. We've had the opportunity to bring people close and under our tent and under our cloak. We have a Yitzchak. We purchased a plot of land called Maris HaMachpelah. We found a wife for our son, Yitzchak. He's going to continue the tradition. It's true, there are ups and downs, there are highs and lows. The moon waxes and the moon wanes. But don't allow our life to be defined by the waning moments, by the difficulties, by the trials, by the tribulations. Kulam shavim letova. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has a plan for us. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has created and built a life for us. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has put us into the nisyonos, to the challenges that we have for a reason, for a cause. And therefore say, Sarah and Avram, we are satisfied. We have a big smile on our face with the difficulties, with the rough patches, with the challenges, with the difficult days, with the difficult months, with the difficult years, with the ups and the downs. It doesn't make a difference. Zaken v'saveya. And that is a way that a Jew has to look at every day, at every month, and every year. With all the hiccups and with the difficulties, we have to be able somehow, some way, it's not easy, but we have to be able to take a lesson from Father Avraham and Mother Sarah, Avraham Avinu and Sarah Imenu, and look to them as our role models, not only as a couple, not only as parents, not only as individuals, but in terms of how they dealt with difficulties and challenges. And that, I think, is a powerful, powerful thing to consider, to contemplate, to think about. Making sure that we're looking at life, at days, at challenges, at issues, and not defining our lives by those events, but rather looking at the positive, being grateful and having gratitude for the basics. Moda ani lefanecha, melech chai v'kayam. We get up in the morning, we could stretch our feet, our backs are straight, we could say, Baruch Hashem, that we are here, and that's what Avram and Sarah teach us, and that's something that we have to make sure to continuously live by and live with, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu should send us the strength to be able to have that positive attitude, and if we're able to have that attitude, Be'ezras Hashem, life can be very, very fulfilling and very happy. Mirtz Hashem, HaKadosh Baruch Hu should allow us to do that. Wishing everybody an amazing, amazing week ahead, a positive week, a good week, a smiley week, and full of Yeshua's Tavos.
Thank you. Thank you for a positive.